Betty. I'm Beverly. I'm an alcoholic. I have to make sure this sounds okay with my husband before I continue. It's good? Okay. Hi, everybody. Gosh, I just, so exciting to be here. And I want to thank Valerie for asking me. I want to thank her how she asked me, because first she said, on the message said, if you would like to do this. And then the second part said, for the fellowship. So then it kind of took the choice a little bit away from it. So I'm always glad to be here. And it occurs to me too, Nancy, thank you for the putting, you guys do so much great service. I know that 80% of the service done in AA is done by 20% of the people, right? So let that sink in for a minute, because those people are in this room right now that I know from Santa Maria that show up and do these things, you know, time and time again. So it's an honor to just be able to come and eat all the lovely food and then be asked to share my story. So before I start, I'd like to introduce my daughter Aurelia, my granddaughter Aurelia, who's here tonight. Would you stand up for a minute, sweetheart? And she just had her hair done by Ann W. So the other thing that's cool in the program is like pretty much anything you need, there's somebody in the program somewhere if you ask, right? You have that done. So Aurelia's mom lives up north and has been also struggling with the same disease that I have, her grandfather has, her father has, and she hasn't been as successful. So Aurelia is a really big part of our life, and she's part of what keeps me wanting to be a better person all the time. So I'm really honored that she's here tonight with us. So a lot of you guys have said, I've never heard your whole story. And I was thinking, well, I shared at the convention, I shared in Solvang, but I guess there's a lot of different areas around here. So I'm gonna go ahead and just, it's my story, take what you like, leave the rest. I get a little opinionated at times, but again, it's, you know, take whatever you want, and whatever you don't, leave it here. I have notes just because, I mean, not even to what I'm going to say, but just in case there's a few things I want to make sure that I do say. Thank you. So next month on the 15th, I'll have 28 years sober. And that's a really big deal for me because I was 28 when I got here. And so it dawned on me that I have been now sober as long as I drank, which you guys are going to go, well, wait a minute, you didn't drink as a baby. And there's a baby back there that was just having a bottle. And actually, I was given whiskey in my bottle really early on. So I was the youngest of five children, and my parents needed some downtime, I guess. So I started drinking at a couple of weeks old. So this year I'll be sober as long as I drank, I guess, which is phenomenal. So I came here when I was 28 years old, which was really young at the time. I still think it's young. But when I got sober on the East Coast, and when I got here, my daughter was three, and I dragged her to meetings because I didn't have a choice really early on. But I woke up one day and realized that my life had gotten really out of control. And the moment when I knew that happened was as I started losing the ability to not physically go without alcohol. So that was when I knew, when my hands shook like this and my whole body trembled. That was so scary to me. Because of the life I had at the time, I came in here when I had a house, a car, a job, a husband. I didn't have any DUIs. Should have. Drove a lot drunk, but I didn't get caught. So I had a lot of things still that we hear the not yets. So a lot of things hadn't happened to me yet. But some really demoralizing things had, and they were all secret, and they were all stuffed down deep inside. And so when I couldn't not drink. So I remember going to the grocery store and trying to write a check. Probably in December, I was trying to write a check out, and my hand shook so badly because the alcohol I was getting ready to buy, I hadn't consumed yet, and I didn't quite space it enough to where I was calm enough to do that. And I just remember feeling so humiliated and just terrified. I was terrified because I didn't know a lot about alcoholism. I knew that it was the alcohol withdrawal that was creating the physical symptoms, but I just didn't really know that much about it at the time. So my father passed away that December, and I like to say that I tried to join him, I think. I drank as much as I could. I had, you know, I went from like being a Miller Lite drinker or Coors Light to like really high-end drinks because I was super, ritzy at one point. Ended in the end with like Popov in the water bottle, you know, straight up. My father had passed away, and I started drinking more and more heavily at that time. And for years, my then husband would say, like, you gotta look at your drinking, you gotta watch your drinking, you're getting out of hand. If you guys are offended by drugs, I'm sorry, but that's a part of my story. I was doing a lot of cocaine so that I could drink more. And my life got out of control quickly with that. And so I decided I was going to stop doing all drugs and I was going to just drink. And then that landed me, in AA. But then I tried to drink to get the same level of high that I was trying to get with everything. So that December after my father passed away, which is a whole other part of my story, that at the time I thought it was because I loved him so much and I missed him so much, and today I realize there's a lot more involved in that when a parent passes away, what happens inside sometimes. But so I just started drinking and hit it really hard, and that New Year's, my best friend came down from Massachusetts, and we went out, we were drinking, and she kept saying, like, we can be done, like, let's be done. You know, we were smoking cigarettes at the time. She's like, let's just go back to the house. And I was like, no. I couldn't stop. I was just on that, what we do. You guys know what we do. And that night, I came home. It was New Year's Eve. And I looked in the mirror. And for a split second, I didn't recognize who I was anymore. I realized that everything that I thought I was not true. And I had that moment of what they call the moment of clarity, and I made the decision that night to ask for help and turn to my partner and said, you know, please, can you get me help? So by the time I walked into the ER, some of you guys have heard this story before, but the nurse said to me, you know, honey, you're fine. You don't need to be here. You're fine. And I was begging her, like, please, you don't understand. Like, it's a lot of work. Because I was drinking so much, you guys, that I functioned. I seemed normal, right? You guys all know how that goes. Like, we kind of cross that threshold where it's like, that's just my maintenance, right? So the ER nurse was trying to tell me I didn't need to go in. I begged her. And so they let me into detox at the local hospital. And I remember 2 days in getting my blood alcohol level, which was a 0.428. So those of you that know, like, so the doctor came in and he said, you know, you should be dead. Your cholesterol's off the charts, your liver is damaged. There is so much alcohol in your system that if you would have just drank all at one time that amount, you would be dead. And if you keep on, you're not gonna be here. And I remember listening to him and just trying to figure out, like, how can this be happening? Is this for real, you know? So I thought I was just gonna go in and detox and get it out of my system, and then I wouldn't shake anymore, and then I could go on with my life, right? Because I thought that was the problem. The problem was the shaking, right? I just kind of crossed over. And then a lady started to come. So I was so sick, so dependent at that point. I spent 10 days in detox, and during that time, a woman came to see me every day, and she brought me a big book, and she started talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, she started talking about what alcoholism is, she started talking about things like rehab, and I was just like, I just can't even hear you, like you're a really nice lady, but I'm not an alcoholic, like I just have, you know, this, you know, you just got the shakes. That's what I kept telling her, like that's gonna be okay. And she said, all right, well just, you know, read the book. So I started reading the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, big book, which, you know, is not all that well written, I would argue. But now it's like the deepest text ever to me. Like it just, every time I pick it up, there's something more incredible about the things that are written. I have a few things I wanna quote from there today before I'm done. But at the time I just was like, this isn't even really all that well written. And you know, what are these two men and what do I have in common with them? And but she came every day and she said, look, there's this place, your insurance covers it. You know, we can get you to treatment. And I didn't know what that meant, but I was really scared. And she said, she started quoting statistics, which I'm going to do a little bit here in the end today, too. But she started saying, you know, your chances are less than average. All those kinds of things, like most people, you know, cannot stay sober without a program. I didn't want to hear that, right? And so I listened to her, and I ended up going into a rehab facility that was, saved my life, honestly. And I'm just gonna take a side note here. The woman that 12-stepped me in the hospital later died of a heroin overdose. And I tell you that because she was so dedicated and she didn't work for a treatment center. She didn't, her only mission coming to see me for those 10 days was for me to get the help that I need, like how we do, right, with 12-stepping. And she came every day, and then when I found out, I was, I think, 10 years sober when I found out that she had gone on pain pills, graduated to heroin, and then died of an overdose. And it reminded me how precious recovery is, and that's really what I want to talk about tonight. I mean, we all only have today, right? We only get to enjoy this gift a day at a time. So I like to mention that because I think it's relevant. She was an angel in my life, and I don't know why she didn't make it, and I had lost contact with her. What I understood was that she stopped going to meetings and she stopped working the steps, and she kind of did that thing where we sometimes do, which is we graduate or we think we can, like we know it all, there's nothing new to learn. So I took from that loss, I took that I was going to take my recovery even more serious because I was so scared to go back to that. When I got to rehab, one of the things that the first time the counselor sat me down in the community group, he said, you have to say you're an alcoholic and stand up. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Like, that was like the worst thing in my mind that I could have, you know, graduated to. And so all of a sudden I was like, I need to run out of this place. Like, I can't do that. And the guy, you know, his name was Jim. I'll never forget him. He held my hand. He stood up with me. I said I was an alcoholic. I cried hysterically. And from then on, my life started to change. And one of the things I learned in there is they said, alcoholics are pretty complicated folks. Right? Yeah, I would say so. And so I started looking at causes and conditions. I started understanding that, you know, when I went in there, I said, you know, they said, you know, what's your family like? You know, is there alcoholism in your family? And I was like, no, my family's great. Like, you know, we're so, you know, healthy and close. And, you know, now, like, you know, a week into rehab, basically, if anybody that's ever done therapy, like, you start going, oh, okay, yeah, okay, I understand that I come from where I come from, a long line of struggling people, I guess is the best way to say that. So I went through the program. I got called for, this is gonna sound dumb, but it was relevant for me. We were in I was almost 30 days in treatment. I was doing really well. I was kind of like, I don't know, your model patient for a period of time or whatever. But the thing that bothered me is they wouldn't let us have sugar and they wouldn't let us have tea or any kind of caffeine. And so I had one of the guys that graduated like a few days ahead, I had him come back as a visitor and sneak in tea bags and chocolate. Chocolate's still a challenge for me. But so he brought in tea bags and me and my roommate went into our room and we made caffeinated tea and we drank it like we were the addicts that we were. And then we went to the community AAA meeting that night and we started laughing and we couldn't stop laughing. Like we look like we're on whatever, right? So got pulled aside, got put in front of the panel and they, you know, they sat me down and they're just like, you know, Beverly, this is exactly addict behavior. This is exactly why you're here. So you're going to get another 17 days in rehab so you can take a look at that. So, and I was in that place where it was like, I didn't want to go back to whatever that was. So I was willing to do anything. And so I did want to mention, like, so especially with Aurelia being here tonight. So one of the other pieces that was such a bottom for me was the blackout drinking. And, you know, one of the worst memories that I have around that was when I was supposed to pick up my daughter. My husband and I said, who's picking her up from preschool today? And it was like, it was supposed to be me. And I was in a blackout because I'd been drinking that morning before work. And I just assumed he was picking her up. And so nobody showed up. And my daughter sat in preschool and the teacher lived upstairs, thank God, and took her upstairs. But about 8 o'clock, I'm at happy hour, trashed out of my mind. And I have this phone call and it's like, where's Elisa, who's my daughter? And I was like, I thought you were getting her. And so there's 100 of those kind of stories, you guys. But those kind of moments where every piece of integrity that I thought I was crumbled. Like I thought I was a great mom. I thought I was a great partner. I thought I was a great employee. And those things kept going into question. So the things that, you know, especially with my daughter at the time, I just, that was another big part of my bottom. I didn't want to forget to mention that. So there's a book, and I can't remember who it's by right now. So a lot of what I say isn't necessary. My story is my story, but some of the things that I've heard along the way, I just want to share, because I know there's some newcomers in the room, and my role and my soul were eating each other. Like Sister B talked about that at a retreat recently, and that statement like resonated so deep for me because my role, I thought I was one way, and alcohol and drugs turned me into a different person that I didn't know who I was. The scariest part about that is that I was able to carry that mask and show the world. When I went to rehab, people were like, what are you talking about? Like, you have a drinking problem and you're always, you know, with a water bottle. And, you know, I'm like, that's vodka, you guys. You know, it's like, ugh. And then there were the people close to me that were going, oh, thank gosh. Thank God she's getting sober, right? Because they knew. It was just the facade that I had with the outside world. So I felt like that was my truth, that, you know, my role and my soul were eating each other up. And then Bill W., you know, said that getting sober is like barely the beginning. And I know what that meant at the time, but I thought all I had to do was to get sober. So I thought if I got the alcohol out of my system, that everything was going to be okay. Which was indeed the first part of that, right? The first step of that. So 11 years old was my first serious drunk. I was in Germany with my family, visiting family. The guy we were staying with was a winemaker. I drank, I don't know, they said the equivalent of 2 bottles. It tasted like fruit punch to me. I threw up. I ruined my Swiss watch. I told my dad I wish he wasn't my dad, that I wish this other person was my dad. ended out not remembering anything. Like, I should have known that. I did a complete blackout the next day. At 16 years old, my dad came to me. We were very German, very European. My dad came to me and brought me a beer and a pack of cigarettes because he knew I was smoking. He knew I was drinking. And he was like, you're old enough now, 16. So I was like, okay, it's on. And in Maryland, when you turned 18, I was like a few years before that cutoff, you could go to clubs. So I started clubbing, going to bars, doing that whole deal. Got out of the house by connecting with a guy, hooked up with, a man that got me out of the house. That got violent and crazy every time that we drank, ran away from him. I was looking at my notes here. Oh yeah, so all the craziness, so another piece I want to share, that's part of my story, and I don't share a lot, but I had my daughter in the back seat, and I was driving home, probably from preschool or whatever. I was completely drunk, and a guy came to my where I was at a left-hand turn lane. I'll never forget it. Guy came out of the car from behind me and came up to my window and tapped on the window and said, "Are you okay, ma'am? Like, are you okay?" And I was so offended. I was like, "What do you mean? Of course I'm afraid. I'm okay." And like rolled up my window and. So I was weaving, I was all over the place, When I used to go to the jails, I used to go to the women's jail on the East Coast, and I would go in there and they'd be like, "Yeah, but you didn't blah, 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 and you're not blah, blah, blah." And I'd be like, "Guys, I did everything that you did. I just never got caught. Like, I was just lucky, I didn't get caught." But those were times, in hindsight, I'm so thankful for the steps to be able to clean up my past, because I turned into somebody that I didn't ever intend to be, which of course we all understand how that goes. So I came out of rehab, and by the time I had gotten out, a total 47 days or whatever that ended up being, and they were like, "You're going to Al-Anon, NAA, or CODA, and AA." So CODA is Codependency Anonymous, if you guys aren't familiar with that. So I was married to an addict at the time also, and so I'm really thankful for that, that they just said, "You're going to both." And I was so scared that I was going to drink again that I said, "Okay, I'm there." So I'm also celebrating 28 years in that program, and then I've done Debtors Anonymous, and I've done OA, and I've done FAA, and ACA, right? So. Sister B was talking last weekend about, she has a sponsor for everything, a different sponsor. She doesn't lay everything on one sponsor, right? She's like, "I have a nail sponsor, I have a hair sponsor, right?" And we don't put everything all on one person. And so as my issues came forward, I had to get programs to support the different places for me. And for me, you guys, and a lot of I'm a therapist now. But I needed outside help. I learned that in rehab. I knew that my soul was so deep and so dark and so traumatized and so wounded from so far back that I just had stuffed all of that down into a place that I believed alcohol and drugs could just quiet. So I came out, went to my first AA meeting, and there was this man, his name is Jack. He's no longer with us. He was old then. That was 28 years ago. He's probably my age. But so he would lead the meeting. It was in the Smoky Club back east, and he would say, "My name's Jack, and I'm a real alcoholic." And I was like, "What the hell?" Like, "Oh, sorry, Raylia. I told her I wouldn't cuss." I was like, "Who gets to be real or not real? Like, what, So I started feeling jealous of like the old man with the cigarette and the, I wanted to be the real alcoholic. So one day after the meeting, I had such a resentment with him. One day after the meeting, my sponsor said, "Well, go talk to him. Go find out what his story is." So I sat down and I said, "What makes you a real alcoholic?" He says, "Have you read the big book?" I was like, "Yeah." He said, "Well, tell me your story." So I told him 10 or 15 minutes. He said, "Honey, you're more of a real alcoholic than I've ever been. You can have that title now," right? So for a while, because of my ego, I was like, "I'm a real alcoholic. My name's Beverly." I was so proud to be in recovery. Whatever. The other woman that bothered me a lot, another person in the room, she would say, "My name is Pauline Kay, and I'm a happy, comfortable alcoholic." I was like, "What is that? We are happy and comfortable? What is that?" And so I resented her, and I called my sponsor, and I was just like, "This woman, she drives me nuts. She drives a Mercedes. She's got all this beautiful jewelry, and her hair is perfect, and her nails are perfect. Of course she's happy and comfortable." And yeah, so my sponsor, "Why don't you talk to her? Why don't you go have a cup of coffee with her?" Oh, gosh. I sat down with her, and, you know, her story was so rough and so hardcore, and she was, like, from the streets, and, you know, recovery had given her back everything and then some, you know? So, yeah, she was happy, and, yeah, she was comfortable because she worked really hard to become that, you know? But me being like early in recovery, I was just judging all of that. And then people would stand up at something like this and say they had 28 years, and you know, I'd just be like, I don't know, like, really? Like, do people really stay around that long? And what's wrong with them if they're still coming at 28 years? Like, you know? Yeah, so that's how I started in my recovery back east. And there were some really powerful women there that I'm really thankful for. I'm from the Santa Ynez Valley now, but I gotta tell you, Santa Maria AA women are like phenomenal. Like what you guys have going on here is amazing, right? And that kind of support that you guys have created here, I get to be a part of that on different levels. And it's such an honor to work with people that are like, "I'm ready to do whatever needs to be done to stay sober," right? Because that's what I was told I was going to need to do when I got here. And I believed it, and I took it seriously. And I learned pretty quickly that it wasn't about just putting down the drink. Like Bill W. talks about, you know, we have to get to causes and conditions, right? So what does that mean? And then I had to do the steps, right? So the steps freed me of all of the guilt and humiliation of things that I had done. They let me connect with a higher power, make amends, be of service, continue to find prayer, meditation. So the steps I've done, like I told you, in a couple of different programs, but they really cleaned up what I had done as an alcoholic and an addict in my life. So it freed my spirit to be able to move forward. What it didn't do, and this is just for me, it's just my story, it didn't do when I did the fourth step and I was like, well, here's a resentment I have when, you know, I was four and this happened and this happened. What's my part, right? So I got to the what's my part, and I really believe that children don't have a part in a lot of abuse and trauma that happened in their lives. So for me, that's where I had to go, had to dig a little deeper, right? So then I had a sponsor for everything. For me, it was also a therapist, a group. I had to be willing to heal that side too. And I've heard some people say, well, you know, the your part in trauma is that you're still hanging on to it. And I'm going to tell you right now, like, I disagree with that 100%, right? So once you heal that piece, and then you still want to hang on to it or identify it or, you know, do what Sister B calls be the victimese language or whatever, you can do that. But I believe that if I had not done the deeper work underneath of my addiction, I wouldn't be standing here today. And that continues to be true. And I guess, you know, I was when you guys asked me to share at the convention, like, it was in a place where it just feels so important for me to say today that I have to go to any length to stay sober. Like, we stand here, I stand here, and there are days when I take this for granted, and I'm like, I'm sober, yeah, of course I'm sober, thank you God for keeping me sober, but really, truly, like, most of us don't make it, right? Even the ones that initially get to AA don't stay, like, 1 in 100 or whatever, right? So unless we're willing to really grasp this miracle for what it is, I can't say enough about that. It's terrifying to me. I've watched people, of course, and you guys all have too, like, we've watched people die from this disease or variations of this disease. You watch the soul death. And my story has not been, you know, just show up and don't drink. That has not been my story. And I'm grateful for that because I feel like I get to live on solid ground in my recovery. And I feel like I can, a day at a time, if I concentrate on my spiritual condition, that I'll get to stay here. So after I got out of rehab and went to AA, I didn't get sober on New Year's Day. That wasn't my sobriety date. My sobriety date is tax day, April 15th. So there was some time in there where I was really stumped. I was going to meetings. I was doing everything they told me to do. I was talking to Pauline Kay and Jack, and I was doing research. I was poll taking everybody. How do you do this? How do you, you know, and yet I was still drinking. I was still relapsing every once in a while, and it was killing me. And the last relapse I had, I can't even tell you what happened. Nobody tells me what happened. I just woke up, and I to this day, it was just back in the detox. So I was scared, and I was going to meetings, and I was like, the cravings hasn't been lifted. The craving is still there. And they kept saying, you have to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. You have to let this go, Bev. Like, you're not going to be able to do this yourself. I'm like, I'm not doing it myself. I'm in AA. I'm doing all this. And like, nope, you got to turn it over. You got to ask for it to be relieved. And so again, because of my past, I wasn't having a really great relationship with a higher power at the time. So the idea of turning it over to something or someone that I didn't trust didn't feel very, very much a possibility. So here's what happened for me, which is significant, and to this day, I still can't fully explain it. But so I drank, and then I drank again, and then I drank again, and I called my sponsor, and I cried, and I detoxed, and the ladies all came to my house. And so I went to a meeting, the Atlantic Club, which was just down the street from the graveyard where my dad had been buried. I told you he had just passed away. There wasn't any gravestone on his plot yet. So I went to a meeting. I was coming home. It was pouring down rain. I was all by myself. And I knew that night, like, I was either going to run my car off the road or I was going to go get drunk and just let the cards fall where they were, or I was going to have to try this God thing. And so I went to the gravesite and I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just connect with, you know, my higher power or whatever at the gravesite where my dad, which start what I thought started the worst part of my addiction after he died. So I went to the graveyard and I couldn't find him, couldn't find his plot. My mom had put an angel on there, but it was raining and muddy. And so eventually I was crawling around literally on my hands and knees. I'm all by myself in pitch black, crawling around desperately, just, you know, ready to die, ready to, where's my dad's grave, crying hysterically. And then finally I just had that moment. I was like, okay, God, if this is what it takes, if I have to look up from here and ask for you to remove the craving, to remove this from me, then please do it now, because I have nothing left after this. I have nothing. And as soon as I said that prayer, as soon as I did that, I stumbled on the angel, which was my dad's grave, and I knew in that moment that I was going to be okay. It was the feeling of peace that came over, and the wanting to die and to drink had been lifted that night. Now, I didn't think that was going to hold. I didn't think that meant anything other than I'm not going to drink tonight because I'm all muddy. I'm going to go home. I'm going to ride it out. And I didn't realize the significance of that until later. But you know, knock on wood, I've never had a desire to drink since that night, 28 years ago. And to me, that's miraculous. And I can't stand here and say what kind of God that was or what that is. And today, when people ask me, define your higher power, tell me. It's like, no. The 11 steps says sought through. Right, we seek, and I'm seeking. I was seeking that night, and I'm still seeking today. Like, I just have no interest in trying to put it in a box or try to understand it too much, other than I know that it needs to just not be me. Right, that's what I was taught. Like, the You don't have to understand what the higher power is. It just needs to not be you. And that's still true today when I struggle with things. It just needs to not be me that comes up with all the solutions. So that was when the craving was lifted. And then it was kind of on, because I was like, wow, then I really did do step 1, 2, and 3. And my sponsor was like, okay, now we can move on. Let's dive in, right? And so I did the steps, and I remember doing my 5th step with her and then running back, because I read the part in the big book that said, if there's anything you left out, or I don't even know what it says, but what I heard was, if there's anything you left out, like, you're going to drink unless you run back and tell your sponsor everything. So I did that. I ran back, and I told her, here's one more thing. I need to just clear. I'm really ashamed about, and that cleared it. And so there's a quote on page 492 in the big book that says, those events that once made me feel ashamed and disgraced now allow me to share with others how to become a useful member of the human race. And I remember reading that and just going, wow, yeah, that's what this steps did for me. They changed that for me. The other piece that I want to mention, and this isn't my work, this is like Brene Brown's stuff, who's also sober, but so like the average person that's not an alcoholic, like when they make a mistake, they go, wow, I missed the mark, kind of like how we do once we've been here for a while, but it's like, I missed the mark, I made a mistake, and I'm going to make that right, and I go on with my life, right? So the alcoholic or the addict says, I messed up. I made a mistake. I am a mistake. I have to hide that. I'm going to go into shame and secrecy, and it becomes like who we are, and then we drink over it, right? And so one of the most powerful things I learned was that I am not what I do, right? I am a child of God, and I make mistakes, and if I can live in that reality of like, I miss the mark sometimes, a lot of times, probably more today than even back then, because I'm conscious of it, but I know how to make amends, right? The steps, the program teaches me, like, when you miss the mark, you just go clear it up. You're just like, I'm really sorry. Like, I'm really sorry that happened. How can I make that right? What can I do to make this okay, you know? And then I go on with my life. I don't go into some deep, dark, scary place. Yeah, and then I read recently that, and this was like one of those memes on Facebook or whatever, but it said, man, I really wish I didn't get sober, said no one ever, right? Just wanted to make sure I said that, because that one was hysterical. And then another on page 68, there's a thing that means a lot to me and I think about all the time is, the prayer, and Sister B talked about this too, of like, God, remove my fear and direct my attention to what you will have me be, right? Simple prayer. But that's what we're asked to do. Once we get clean and sober and get our life straightened out, then we become of service to the universe, to the world, to the God, to whatever it is. And in order for me to do that, I have to be willing to remove the fear that's connected, that blocks me from being able to do that. And the fear oftentimes is just my ego anyway. The other piece that became really important to me is I have to name it to change it, right? So as soon as we get here, I was like, why do I have to say I'm an alcoholic every time? Well, because you got to name it to change it, right? So I'm like, I think that's a negative. Why am I always saying that? And it's like, well, now being a recovering alcoholic, like, I'm proud of that. Like, I'll stand on the tops of buildings and wave my flags or whatever, but it wasn't like that when I got here, of course. So I have to name it to change it. So all that stuff that I was talking about, like down in that deep, dark, ugly part that I carried forward from childhood and then from my drinking, like I had to clean all of that out. And I had to say what it was, and I had to ask for help, and I had to seek out whatever the resources were to clear that. Because for me, if I don't, I will drink or use or find some other addictive behavior, and I'll go there, right? So anything to not feel what's back there. So, yeah, I already said that one. So, yeah, so the main thing I was told when I got here was you know, all those cliche sayings. I just get so confused. Like the club I went to, it said, like, think, and then it said, like, don't think, don't listen to your thinking, or don't drink, don't think, and I was just like, which is it? You know, and then they're like, a day at a time, just one day at a time, but you can never drink again, right? Wait, what? You know, didn't get that. So all those sayings that, you know, I think probably at year 10, I started rolling my eyes at almost everything. Like, if one more person says that cliche in a meeting, I'm just gonna, you know. But those are the things that keep me sober, you know. My husband and I were talking, like, you know, he likes to talk about the, you know, it's 20 miles in, it's 20 miles back out, right? So we get sober and we're like, why isn't my life all perfect? Come on now, right? Like, no, it took 20 however many years to get in. You got to do the work to come back out, right? So all those sayings. The other one, and this one is original to my husband, who's back there, Owen, by the way. He'll go. Well, there's no rattlesnakes under my chair right now. Okay. It's true, right? So there's nothing I can't do one moment at a time if I can just breathe and be in the moment, right? I can get through that. So all those sayings were really important. Going to meetings, you know, I still go to meetings. I still go to a lot of meetings, various meetings. I read the big book, the 12 and 12, the meditation. So not every day, not perfectly, not like I did when I first got here. But when I want an answer, I go to my recovery for those answers and the people. I have a sponsor. She's back east. I call her my angel mom now because she's more of a mother figure to me, as well as a sponsor. And she's been there for everything. I can call her anytime, any place, and I never want to take that for granted, right? So if you're new here and you don't have a sponsor, or you have like one of those sponsors that you think looks good, or at least you can say you have a sponsor, but you're not using that sponsor, like, I highly recommend. It's a lot easier doing it not by yourself, not alone. And then, of course, the steps and getting the help that we need is outside help, which Bill W. talks about. I'm not going to go, you know, sometimes I'll go into all the quotes and all the places where he says, you know, sometimes it's not enough to just stop drinking or just doing the steps. We are complicated people. So I think that's like the main. Oh, and then does everybody know what Rule 62 is? So raise your hand if you know what Rule 62 is. Yeah, okay, so some people do. So don't take yourself so, sorry again, really, damn seriously, right? So I've been accused of that. I take things very seriously. I take my recovery seriously. Robert and I were just talking a minute ago. Like, I definitely go into seeing the risks of relapse for people and myself. Like, I live in a world where I'm always trying to encourage more people to heal and to find their true, authentic, safe, recovering self so that we don't have to go back out there. And then, you know, I will mention when I got here, I was a legal assistant, right? And a good one. I thought it was pretty all that. We drank a lot at that law office, but I was pretty good at what I did. When I got sober and went to rehab and then was given a therapist when I came out, she was a drug and alcohol counselor that was very gifted, and she encouraged me to become a drug and alcohol counselor, which I did. And then later I got my social work BA, and then later got my master's, and I'm a trauma specialist and addiction specialist and all that kind of stuff, all because of recovery and all because God would say, I would say, remove my fear and show me what you'll have me be, right, like I just read, and then God would say, okay, this is the next thing, and I'd balk, right? Really? Okay. And that happened again recently this year. I was, you know, just moving along. Everything's, you know, pretty awesome in my life and calm, and I kept getting this nudge of, you know, it's time to expand. It's time to do some more. It's time to up your game professionally, and so been willing to follow that, and so my life just keeps getting better and more powerful all the time. So the last thing I want to mention is $23.5 million Americans are addicted to alcohol and other drugs. This is on a 2017 statistics. Of that 23.5 million Americans, 15.4 million are straight up alcoholics, right? So that's a lot of people, right? And only 2,103,184 people are actually recorded in recovery, right? So there's 21 million people in the United States that have not found this program or have found some semblance of it and couldn't grasp it. So that's part of my life mission, is I want to be that kind of example that people will meet me, and I'm not going, hey, this or this. So people all the time will say to me, like, what do you do? How does your life work? Where do you get those, you know, cute little sayings you say all the time in these business meetings or whatever? And so it's the attraction, but also I'm willing to be available to the people that say, you know, I'm really struggling with this. You know, because a lot of people don't get this gift, you guys. So if you're sitting here tonight, and I'm standing here tonight, like, this is a gift, and we are the miracles. Like, most people don't get this. Right? They're not getting it. So I think we have to, you know, and this is what I was talking about with Robert, like, we have to work a little harder, I think, to not just, for me especially, not just be like, I've got my recovery, I've got my great life, I've got this, I'm being of service, I'm doing that, but I also have to be willing, like, I think we're here, just like Bill and Bob were, to share a message and to encourage other people to find this path, right? So, so 20 million people, yeah, so 230 million people worldwide. So I'm just talking about, you know, the United States here, but 230 million people worldwide are suffering from this illness and are not finding, for whatever reason, they're not finding recovery or they're not staying. And AA is not the only way, but it's the only way that, and, you know, a few other similar programs are the only ones that we've ever found that people just don't die from if they don't find it, right? So we're all the world has right now. So maybe something more will come along one day, but we're it. You know, so I feel like we have a really important mission to do. So, and then lastly, I'll just wrap it up with this. Sister B quoted a few of these, so I was just like really interested, so I started looking these up. So joy in the big book is talked about 13 times. Honesty is 19 times. Laughter is 4 times. Fun in variations, like, was we are not a glum lot, right? So 5 times. Depression is in there. And then this is the one that speaks, these two speak the most to me. Happiness is referred to 33 times in the big book. Right? So we're not here as a glum lot. We're not here to be like, ah, you know, where I go sometimes. Like, we're here to be happy, joyous, and free, right? And to have fun, like tonight, and eat incredible food and hang out with incredible people and have fellowship and win baskets and that sort of thing. I love that, and I love that Aurelia got one. I said happiness, right? Yeah, 33 times happiness. There's one more I was going to say. Anyway, so so we want to happy, joyous, and free. That's where I try to live, and I try to balance that between the seriousness that I take about recovery and healing, because I believe that it's so important that we continue to do whatever we need to do to stay clean and sober, so that we can pass this message on to others. And that includes when somebody asks you if you, you know, want to share at a chili cook-off. You go, can I just come eat the chili? And then the last thing, an excerpt from Dr. Bob's story. He talks about, perhaps the best thing of all for me to remember is that my serenity is inversely proportional to my expectations. So, you know, my expectations, if I can keep them in check, and just be, you know, all I had to do tonight was to come up here, you know, think about it a little bit, pray about it for sure. But what I had to do is come up here and just tell my story where it is today and share with you who I am, because that's really all I got is the, you know, the authentic me for right now, right? My story will be different next week, but that's where I am today. So it was an honor to be asked to do this. And if you're new, please keep coming back and please support everybody, you know, like just ask for help, like ask for help. And if you don't know, if you're stumped and it just doesn't make sense, somebody else has been through it. Somebody has been there. So just keep asking, keep reaching out until you find that help that you need. Thank you so much, you guys.